Are you ready?
Funny.
Expensive.
Wanna.
Whatever.
Be happy.
Hey everyone. Welcome back to The Funny Papers, a show where three 30-somethings share a collective psychosis about the classic 90s cartoon show, Doug. I'm Mike, and with me are my friends Sam.
Honk honk.
And Jim.
Somebody just honked, and I'm not entirely sure why. Are you all right, Sam?
Honk honk.
Okay, good.
So today, we cover episode 2 of Doug. In all the episodes after the first, Doug was separated into two 12-minute shorts. Episode 2's titles are Doug Can't Dance and Doug Gets Busted. Let's begin with Doug Can't Dance. As this begins, the first shot is a nighttime shot of Doug's street and it's panning across his neighbor, our hero, Mr. Dink.
At the intersection of Vine and Jumbo, there lives a great darkness, and that darkness goes by Dink.
The animation for this episode is absolutely fucked. It's like, I thought it was, like I thought the first episode was bad, but, I mean, this was the pilot, which they showed first, even though it happens after the, when they move into Bluffington.
Time and space are meaningless. We've established this.
Just baffling decisions.
It's starting, the first episode was beginning in medias res, right? It was beginning at the high conflict.
In the middle of the race.
That's a $10 word for you. But like, based on the perspective, Bud Dink is like 10 feet tall.
Yeah, he's bigger than the house.
Yeah, no, Mr. Dink is playing golf at night in front of his house by, according to the perspective, just about to fucking smash some of his own windows. Presumably this brings him pleasure.
Yeah, he's playing golf, like he's practicing golf at like very nighttime. And he's aiming either at his house or at Doug's house because a bunch of balls end up on Doug's
lawn. Never played golf. He's aiming directly at his own house. The balls that he hits are, like, Mr. Dink has a slice from hell itself insofar as when he strikes the ball, it somehow takes a 90-degree curve and hits the Funny Family's mailbox. Mr. Dink is not it's clear he needs to practice. It's not clear why he's practicing in such a way that if he ever gets his stroke right, he is going to destroy his own home.
That famous sport you play at night, golf.
Yes.
It's night golf. It's extreme golf. And you're right, like when he does hit Doug's mailbox, he does yell sorry. So you're right, he probably was aiming at his own house. Also, while he's doing this, his wife Tippy comes out, she says, Bud, watch your back, which, you know, you think like the purpose of this is to say, like, you know, don't hurt yourself. But wouldn't you say, like, be careful, you have a bad back? No, watch your back. That is an ominous statement.
Extremely paranoid.
That's incredibly ominous and is followed up by him saying, hey, Tippy, want to shag some balls?
Which is awesome. Like, I mean, that's definitely like a weird sexual innuendo joke in the very right. Second line of Doug. No,
yeah. This was the first one that came out. So the first two lines of Doug are, watch your back. Do you want to shag some balls?
Like, one, it's incredible. Very clearly a sexual innuendo. And two, Jim Jenkins very clearly did not play golf at any point in his life. Because that's not a thing you say.
Well, okay, let's be clear. Shag some balls means to, like, pick the balls back up, right? It means to, like, be a caddy. And so in this instance, he's basically saying, hey, Tippy, you want to clean up after my mess for me while I destroy our home? This is the first interaction that ever occurs in the Doug universe.
Which honestly gives you an awful lot of an understanding of what the 90s understanding of husband-wife interaction was supposed to be. Hi, I'm a gigantic, goofy man-child. You better clean up my messes. No, by the way, I gotta go and start talking about some conspiracies about who actually killed JFK.
Also, to this end, like, So we saw in the first episode, like we saw in the last episode, that constantly Tippy would just be like over Mr. Dink's shit. She would just be like, oh my God, like what a shitty joke, right? But this is the first time we see Tippy show like genuine concern for Mr. Dink, as in like, you know, your back
her
is
husband.
Bad. Right, her husband, as in like your back is bad. And he immediately is just like, oh yeah, clean up my mess, right?
Clean up these balls.
So that's our introduction.
I'd say that I want to know how these two met, except for later in the episode we learn how these two met, and dear fucking God.
Right.
Just as an aside, really quick, when I was making notes for this show, I kept typing instead of Tippy, Dippy, and then instead of Dink, Drink. But Drink is such a good fucking name. It's like a cyberpunk name.
Wait, which one? Tippy?
Bud Drink.
Bud Drink is owned and operated by the Anheuser-Busch Corporation.
Mr. Drink is so good. I laughed harder at like me making a typo than I did the entire 22 minutes I watched the show.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, we should also lead with like, in the first episode, we talked about how the first episode of the show was, like, very dull, but that was damn interesting compared
right.
to the first episode of, like, the first part of this second episode. Like, this is dull, right? But there
literally, is... Like-
There are some like wild like universe buildings part of this episode, but like from a perspective of just here's what happens, it is dull.
Yeah, literally, like these 22 minutes made me realize like the horrible mistake I made, like having the idea for this podcast. And I watched it twice.
Oh, good! You figure it out,
right? I watched it once without notes and once with notes. That's how dedicated I am to just this project of ours, this horrible hellacious project.
after we recorded the first episode, I was kind of on like an energy high, and I was like, yeah, I'm excited to get going, I'm gonna start watching the second episode right now. I got 5 minutes in and had to turn it off because I was just like, this is ruining my energy.
Yes.
And I had to come back later. But yeah.
Hell yeah, I'm excited, I'm gonna take on the world. Oh, never mind, world
this
sucks
is
actually.
The world now.
Extremely long 22 minutes, possibly the longest 22 minutes in fiction.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got plenty of episodes to go. Don't you fucking worry.
We'll get there. We promise you, dear reader, that we will get through as much of this as our fragile brains can handle. So we move, we see the shot that introduces us to the main character of the show, Mr. Dink, and then we move into Doug's room, which is Doug writing in his journal, who at this time he calls it his diary, but it throughout the rest of the show it's his journal.
So, really quick, there is an episode later that he gets extremely upset when people call it his diary, so I sort of question the canon of this episode.
Well, there's a lot of things that are like non-canonical about this show.
Yeah, the pilot, so that's the reason it happened, right. But I'm going to take like a galaxy brain and just say this is occurring in an alternate universe.
Okay.
Entirely possible. That explains a couple of the problems I had with it.
That's why Roger looks the way he does. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So we first see Doug writing in his diary, also journal, and the first thing that he says, which is a really weird grammatical, like, structured statement, is he says, which that was also one, he says, the school dance seemed like it happened a long time ago.
But I remember it like it was only yesterday. It all began, well, this afternoon.
Like, that's about the level of joke I expect from Doug, like, I remember this thing that happened earlier today like it was just yesterday. Aha, that's, you see, the joke is that the child has a poor sense of time. I don't care.
Doug is unstuck in time.
But if I'm in sixth grade and I'm listening to them like, ah, that's a joke. I understand the thing that was said. I feel smart.
Right.
Imagine getting Doug's like journal and then you're reading it and like, well, this might be interesting, like a little slice of life, and you get like two pages in and you're like, I should respect people's privacy.
This has taught me a lesson.
Right.
Like, when it was submitted to the jury in the inevitable trial after he goes nuts and shoots up them all. Here is exhibit A, B, C, D, just running all through the entire thing as the defense attempts to demonstrate there is no way my client would ever do something so interesting. You've got the wrong man.
Right. So, I mentioned in the last episode that every episode from here on out, to my knowledge, is him recalling the events through, like, an entry in his journal. Which makes me think, since I don't think this episode is canon, I think this episode is a Calvinist parable. Are you aware of what Calvinism is?
I totally am, but let's, in case our readers aren't, let's go over it.
So it's one of the more fucked up Protestant versions of Christianity. They believe in something called predestination, which is basically fate. Like, there's good people that will go to heaven, and there's bad people that will go to hell. You can't do anything about it. Nothing at all.
But you can tell who the people who will go to heaven and who goes to hell based on whether good things or bad things happen to them in life. By the strangest coincidence, Calvinism got really big around the time that the economic developments were such that peasants were capable of getting really rich without being nobles. And so as a result, somebody who walked around saying, oh, you can tell you're going to go to heaven if good things happen to you. Well, I sold 80 tons of dried fish to somebody, therefore I must be going to heaven. And unsurprisingly, a religion that said this would work out for them, they were all the fuck over.
The other thing that makes this, in my mind, a Calvinist parable is that Calvinism would regularly excommunicate people for dancing. In this episode, it is Doug can't dance.
That's
I rest my case,
great.
Dear jury, because it was like a fucked up time.
Like, it's a demonstration. You know how people these days will say that,
just
I don't know.
Pleasureless people.
Like gay sex is going to get you sent to hell, that drug use is going to get you sent to hell. Back in the bad old days, when they didn't have access to those things, they instead said that, oh no, if you dance, you will be sent directly to hell.
If you enjoy music.
Or enjoy anything.
Yeah, basically.
Basically, yeah. Well, no, pardon me. They were still 100% down with alcohol. They were all about alcohol.
True.
You could also enjoy God.
You can also enjoy pretending to enjoy God and then do all those other things in private.
Yes, that was one of the other side effects of, oh yeah, if you make a lot of money, that means that you're going to heaven. Therefore, if you make a lot of money, whatever you do must be necessarily okay. And so you have this, it's the setup for an awful lot of just absolute theological insanity, but the core of it is that they basically reinvented the whole indulgences thing that Protestantism was trying to get away from, where if you just buy yourself out of a mortal sin, like, okay, no, as long as good things continue to happen to you, as long as you continue to make money, as long as your wife continues to be too afraid to run away from you, you are still in God's good books, and therefore whatever you do must be okay. Therefore, God must be okay with you fucking around on the down low. It's science, you see.
And they also have, like, a clause where even if you're in the good graces, you can still, like, fuck it up, even though there's all things have already been decided. Like, it's an entirely, it's a very bizarre religion. And, I think this is, like, more of a Baptist show than a Calvinist show. So,
but Calvinism very much influences Baptistism.
Yes.
Like, Baptistism.
This is why I think it's a non-canon parable.
Wait, hold up.
Yes.
We're just, like, real quick question before we get back to the show.
Yeah.
But if dancing was bad, does that mean that there were like private underground speakeasy dance clubs?
Oh yeah.
Awesome.
There were all sorts of them. Like, you may have heard of like masked balls and shit, like where people would like put on costumes and whatnot. Those started because you can't identify somebody if they're wearing a mask.
No way.
So,
what the fuck? God
damn
it.
Yeah, no, that's
history.
How that shit yeah. Oh, yeah, no, like, there's all sorts of fun cases of shit like that. It's absolutely wild.
But didn't they have it at, like, someone's house? Wouldn't they, like, assume that that person's house was, like,
But it's possible that they snuck in without the man of the house's knowledge. There's
oh
no
God.
Way of knowing. It's astonishing how these dance criminals will go thither and yon.
Dance criminals. I love it. This is a learning show.
Sorry for that tangent, but...
Don't be. That's perfect.
Yeah, speaking of dance crimes and the necessity of hiding your shameful sins from the eye of God, let's move on to Doug putting together a costume of a slug somewhere.
Right. He's putting, so we move from like Doug recollecting what's going on into the first scene of him and Porkchop building his costume for what is apparently a costume dance party at his school. He's creating like a slug sort of looking outfit. But the first scene out of this, like, he's in a shed. He's not in his garage because no one in Bluffington has a driveway or a garage. We notice this in the first shot. But like, he's in a shed and Porkchop is like spraying something on the costume, which we assume is like paint or like disinfectant or something. But Porkchop is wearing
that costume. Seen some use in other things. Needs to be disinfected.
The weird thing about that, though, is that Porkchop is wearing breathing protection and Doug is not. And Porkchop is spraying directly into Doug's face because Doug is holding it in front of Porkchop and then Porkchop is pointing it at him. So Porkchop is just spraying chemicals into Doug's mouth.
The running gag in this episode is people not knowing what Doug is dressed up as. And one pointer that I have for Doug was when you're making a slug costume is not to make it blue! There are no blue slugs!
Yeah, everyone else's costumes.
God!
Everyone else's costumes are the right color. Like, his is the only one that's a little off. It's true. Yeah, so the first, like, action point in this is that Doug puts the costume on immediately after all these chemicals have been sprayed in his face and they're still, like, fresh on the costume. He throws it on immediately, and Roger...
Has to get that new slug smell.
Right, Roger, who we learn is not really Doug's friend in the first episode, just opens the door. Just like, hey, I'm here. Like,
he shouts, hey, no, I want to stress how crazy this is, because Roger just opens the door and shouts,
Funny, where are you?
Now, I think we're supposed to expect that this is Doug's house. So Roger just shouts, hey, funny, throws the door open, and evidently under the assumption that only Doug could possibly be here, maybe at this point in development, Doug didn't have parents or a sister, and Doug just lived alone in this shed with his slug costume and his dog. But this is just, like, I'm just picturing the 13-year-old Roger Plotz walking up to a house and shouting, hey, funny! Like, and then just Mr. Funny saying, why, hello, I don't think I have your name, Mr. Like, sorry, I was just here to bully, your son. I guess I'll come back later.
Right.
Yeah, because you assume he went to the main house to begin with, and he knocked on the door, and then his parents, who, I don't know if they know if Roger's a bully or not, I think he wants to be friends with him very pathetically, but, like, he can't do it because Roger just has, like, an insane hatred of Doug for absolutely no reason whatsoever. I guess, like, he hates him because he's stupid, but Roger's also very stupid. So I don't get it.
There's something to that. I think Doug doesn't think that Roger's a bully. I think he's his friend because there's something that happens soon after that makes this apparent in my mind. So let's talk about real quick the interaction that Roger has with Doug. He basically says, say, Doug, you don't look like a slug. Like, he says, what did he say? That you look like, what are you? A pile of manure. That's right.
And his response is, I'm a slug, which is, wow.
Much better.
Yeah.
You got him, Doug. He's got to take it back now.
It's amazing watching this in sort of an immovable object versus unstoppable force kind of way, because Roger is the worst bully, not as in most horrible, as in bad at it. And Doug is just the worst imaginable at trying to get back at anyone. It is watching two concussed kittens flail at one another ineffectually to decide the fate of nations. It is astonishing, just the level of incompetence on display.
I don't think Doug's ever trying to get back at him. I think Doug is trying to get in his good graces. Like, I think Doug genuinely wants to be
worse.
Friends with
Doug doesn't have, like, the amount of complex thought required to get back at him. Like, that would require planning 3 days in advance, and Doug has probably the short-term memory of a starfish.
Of a slug.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So
I missed that layup.
So basically, Roger busts in with the plot of the episode, and he says, "Doug, I know that you've been paired up to dance with Patty Mayonnaise at the school dance." Now, first off, he's being paired up with Patty Mayonnaise. Like, that's like, are they that's just, is up. Everyone in pairs? Like,
like, what if you don't like your dance partner? Do they force you to dance with them?
Yeah, it's not like he got to choose. He said you got paired up with Patty Mayonnaise.
Yes. Someone is deciding who goes with who. Nothing going on here. Nothing going on here.
But Roger doesn't sound like he's paired with anyone. So, like, if who is paired up with who? Like, Roger didn't get one. Because what he says is hey, Doug, she's the best dancer in school. Have you ever danced? And Doug's like, no. So first off, Roger's right. Like, Doug should probably, like, practice a little bit if he wants to, like, be on the same page as this person. But on the other hand, then Roger's like, hey, I'll dance with Patty in your place. So who was Roger's dance partner in the first place?
I think we can assume that Roger's role is, in the classical sense of satanic philosophy, the role of the great satyr. His goal is to foment conflict and misery. Like, he was selected for the holy role of just disruptor, chaos bringer. For those of you who are fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Loki, but slightly less homoerotic, that kind of thing.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of Doug fan art, and all of it is between Doug and Roger.
Yeah, it's all Roger hugging Doug, essentially.
It's really good. I'm a big fan.
Also, if you guys are bored out there, Google Doug creepypasta and immediately pays off.
As we know, you who are listening to this podcast have a real shortage of free time.
It's just as boring as Doug is.
Just as well written.
But going back to him never dancing before, like, really? Has he never, like, heard music? I mean, this goes back into, like, me thinking this is a Calvinist parable, because he has not danced up until this point, probably because they think it's a sin. But I'm just imagining, like, even as a child, like, there are studies that most, if not all, humans recognize some sort of, like, rhythm in dancing. Doug doesn't get that. Like, Doug, like, imagine, I'm just imagining him as a child, like an even younger child, his parents turned the radio on, he just starts screaming like the kid in the Babadook.
Or he just, like, goes into a trance and imagines, like, literally what is happening in the song, but happening to him.
Or he just goes into a trance and imagines himself in the car, but the music isn't playing.
Just imagines the exact scenario.
Right. Yeah.
Like, two notes here. One, I'll actually give the show props insofar as the animation on Roger as he's being all bully-y is better than anything else in the rest of the episode. Like, they do a good job of Roger's face contorting in such a way that you get the sense that, wow, Doug is super intimidated. Admittedly, that's a low bar, but still, I'll give him props for that. And the other thing is, as we go into the imagination zone, as Doug naturally envisions everybody laughing at him and mocking him for being incapable of dancing, in noted masterwork of our slightly later childhoods, Dragon Ball Z, censors change the word hell into the acronym HIFL, H-F-I-L, Home for Infinite Losers. I propose this as a name for Doug's imagination zone, where he is haunted by all the people eternally laughing at him for sucking. That is where Doug goes when he enters the imagination zone. He enters the home for infinite losers.
That's just his room.
Yes.
I'm going to give him a little bit of slack. I mean, come on, he's 11 and he has anxiety. Like, come on, we've all been there.
Look, the babies from Rugrats have anxiety too, but they make a much more compelling case because the babies, like, understand what lying is or what guile is. Like, the babies have, like, more complex thoughts than Doug does.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, you're right. So
also one thing I also want to point out, no matter, like, which order you watch these the first two episodes in, you know, because they're, like, mixed up, both of them start his first imagination sequence with people laughing at
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it's the only source of joy in the world is Doug suffering.
Or it's just God. The main theme of his character.
Yeah,
like, I'm gonna be adamant on this in that, like, I don't think the only thing that Doug's like wrong property to him is that he gets nervous and thinks people are going to make fun
of him. That's not like, a wrong property, but the way they present it is just so utterly dog shit.
I guess because they never like address that it's okay that he had those feelings.
Yeah, Doug is... Oh, no, they do sort of address it, but the way they choose to address it, at least in the episodes we've seen thus far, is that Doug gets anxious. Oh, no, don't worry. You were worried about nothing. That's it. That's the extent of the moral in all three cases I've seen thus far.
As someone who struggles with anxiety and has absorbed the entire show Doug into his brain, I can tell you it has done nothing to help me cope with anxiety. Yeah. Just absolutely nothing.
Turns out in the real world, if you just kind of you're way past, I don't know, like fucking 9/11, as Sam commented last time. Yeah, no, that doesn't make the problem go away. You cannot just sort of say, oh, I'm sure it'll all work out in the end. No, sometimes you're actually going to have to take action in order to avert a bad thing or to mitigate it, and Doug just is not equipped to do that, and in the theology of the show, oh no, don't worry, predestination will handle that shit for you.
So let's move on to Doug trying to take action. Well, first, him and Roger, like, go outside. And this is just, like, a weird animation note that, like, Roger pushes him into some leaves that, like, appeared that weren't there. Like, there was, like, one shot where there weren't leaves there. And then it zooms back out and there are leaves there and Roger pushes him into the leaves. Right? This is just, like, this weird animation note. Then Doug, remember when I said earlier that, like, I think Doug is trying to be friends with Roger and doesn't realize that Roger's a bully. Doug says the phrase as he's walking alone, like trying, like processing this information that Roger has told him. He says,
"I don't know about Roger. Sometimes I wonder if he knows what he's talking about."
And that's weird because it's the first time ever that he's questioned, hey, maybe he's just being a bully to me.
Lying.
Maybe he's just fucking with me. Maybe he's not factually correct all the time.
It's possible that this guy who I met / will meet in the future when I squirt ketchup on his shoes because time is complicated doesn't have my best interests at heart. Maybe that whole thing with the nematodes? Maybe he was trying to, like, make fun of me or something. Eh, probably not.
Nah.
Maybe the plan was so stupid that Doug was just like, there's no way that's the reason he could have been, like, trying to bully me.
Right. Why would he have stuck around afterwards if he was trying to get me bullying? Oh, man. Yeah, but, so this is Doug just, like, walking down the street, like, feeling, like, you know, processing the information that Roger said to him.
Side note, and, he's walking down the street. Like, is he walking to the dance? Is the school within walking distance?
I think
Where is he walking?
Probably to the dance. but he's taking a circuitous route there because he gets run into by Mr. and Mrs. Dink in their car, who are also on their way to the dance to chaperone.
Yeah. Mr. Dink is in a gigantic rooster costume.
No, he's in a thoroughbred chicken costume.
I'm a grade A thoroughbred chicken, but the ultimate in poultry wear. Very expensive.
Yeah, well bred, pure of blood. This massive cock is in fact the most pure source of vitality, who will be watching over the children as they mentor their assigned pairings. I must stress again, nothing weird going on here.
So I got to back up for a second. Roger makes the extremely original joke, make like a tree and leaf, which tells me that the Doug writer's room is stealing their material from popsicles.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah. Like,
and he laughs hysterically at it.
Yeah, Rod.
That's a very funny joke.
He enjoys his own sense of humor. You got to give Roger credit. He finds humor in Doug suffering, like, which appears to be the only source. So, I mean, high fives to the lot of them.
Yeah.
All right. So Dink pulls up.
Dink pulls up, and he does the same thing to Doug, where he asks him. He says, "What are you? A pile of dirty socks?" Which is like, again, not much, like, actually kind of a cooler costume than a slug.
How would you make a costume out of that?
It'd be awesome if you could. But the thing that was weird about this is that when he says that, he is, like, scowling. Like, it shows, like, his eyebrows is in, like, an angry notation.
You're wearing the wrong dress for the ritual, Douglas.
Douglas, you were supposed to be the pile of dirty socks. Oh, man. But, yeah, so they just kind of have an interaction that shows that Dink is going to be... The Dinks, both of them, are going to be chaperones for the dance.
And Mrs. Dink is not dressed up because Mrs. Dink is, again, barely tolerating her husband's shit. By the way, Sam, you're our Jim Jenkins expert. Was he married?
I don't know, actually. One thing I'd like to point out, though, is that Mr. Dink is one of the only adults in Bluffington that doesn't have a kid, and they entrusted him to look over all the children.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Dink is dual income, no kids, and they're just like, you know who'd be really good with children?
Maybe he's the only one that doesn't have to see them every day and was just like, I'll do it.
I've got a lot of free time.
Like, how the hell are they involved with the local parent-teacher association? Like, what the hell?
Well,
that's
also,
a good point.
The Dinks also still, I think I made this point last episode, they still haven't spoken to Doug's parents, right?
So, as far as we know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they. And I'm really curious to watch this and see if they ever do. Because, like, it's weird to me that they just, like, haven't introduced themselves to the rest of the family. But yeah, so this happens with the Dinks. They drive off and Doug goes to mope about this, hang out in a tire swing, and is approached by Skeeter. And Skeeter says, "Say, Doug, are you excited for the dance?" And Doug says,
"Well, first,
yeah, go on."
First, Doug is just like lying in a tire, like moping for whatever reason. And then Skeeter just comes up out of nowhere and just chucks him out of the tire.
Yeah. It's good as if they have the dedicated moping tire swing somewhere on site.
Yeah, everyone needs one.
Yeah, just this is the tire swing of moping. It just lies out there in the middle of, you know, the void, where you can just wander across it on your way to the school dance. And Skeeter, who, is he wearing a costume? I don't remember he was wearing a costume.
He's not. No. He's the DJ. I'll get into that.
Yeah, Skeeter is officiating at this dance where, like, again, this is where we have more...
DJ 10-year-old.
DJ 10-year-old, which is our further reinforcement of the fact that I think Skeeter's the guy who actually is running the show. Like, Dink is clearly involved in some way, but he's not the mastermind. He is the...
The humble servant.
He is, I think, initiated into the mysteries, but is attempting to get to the bottom of it. And Skeeter is in charge of making sure that nobody involved sees anything they shouldn't. Make sure everything goes properly. Make sure that the new kid, who looks like he might be getting late, gets a little shove he needs to get there on time. Also, Skeeter then proceeds to show Doug how to dance. And again, the case of baffling amounts of energy spent on the animation as he ties himself up into a knot in, like, classic Looney Tunes fashion. And then it just lingers on that shot for, like, 10 seconds. Like, much longer than anybody would be comfortable with. And it just muffles, "Hey, can you help me?" And Doug just kind of pulls awkwardly at a limb extruding from the mask that used to be Skeeter. And then he just sort of shuffles off, and you're just left with this impression of, why was any of that shown? What was even the point of that?
It was a joke.
That was a good joke.
It was a funny joke.
Yeah, I liked it.
Didn't waste your time at all.
Yeah, I liked it.
They definitely weren't padding for time there.
Yeah, you looked at that, and you thought, yes, this is humorous. I enjoyed this a great deal.
All it told me is that Skeeter is the guy that got his rib removed so he can suck his own dick.
I think he may have done
that's
it by accident.
That's his defining characteristic.
Yes. Right. Peter absolutely has had that done. Yeah, I am with you on this 100%.
This is canon now, even though this episode is not canon.
Yeah.
This is the one canon part of this episode. That's what we learned.
Also, wait, hold on a second. Given that this is the hypothetical first time we meet Skeeter, like, just this kid wanders up out of nowhere, is an asshole to Doug, and then says, "Oh, don't worry, dancing's not hard, just do this." And then ties himself into knots and shuffles off. Like, if that was my first introduction to a character, I'd be confused and annoyed. Like,
well, you'd also be like, man, dancing looks hard. Like, it looks dangerous. Right? So should we move on to the dance itself, which is basically the next scene? The next scene is Well, wait, hold on. First, is this where Skeeter introduced his DJ name? Or no, he does that. The next scene is the Dink setting up dance.
What's his DJ name?
His DJ name is Skeeter Ice MC.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Wow, it sure isn't 1991.
Two things. One, he's not an MC. He's a DJ. Like, there's a difference.
But a lot of DJs, like, went by that in the 90s.
But they would...
Because they were
gonna
MCs.
If they were going to be the MC... Yeah, because, like, MC Hammer didn't, like, spin the records. He's the hype man.
Well, MC is what? Master of Ceremonies?
Yeah. He's the hype guy. He's the guy that's on the mic.
Skeeter is definitely the hype guy, and he has a mic at his station.
Yeah, but he doesn't talk.
He could if he wanted to. He's ready to talk.
Wait,
at any
a
moment.
Silent MC? Like, that's taking this to whole new weird ritual territory if it is not instead.
God damn it.
If it is not instead, just, yeah, the officiant in silence. That could be a thing. But I think the far more likely answer is that Mr. Jenkins is, and everyone in the writer's room knows that there's something called rap that is something the kids are into these days, but doesn't actually know anything about it.
Well, there's a lot of, like, little 90s hip-hop references in this one.
Little, yeah, no, we're gonna get to a couple more of those soon, but it's like, it's a full-on case of, yeah, that's what the kids do, right? I'm hip, I am with it, as the kids say. But, yeah, the thing that gets me, like, about the next sequence, where we see the Dinks are helping set up the dance, and while Skeeter is setting shit up, there's, okay, Mr. Dink is in his chicken costume, and he's setting up streamers and all that fun shit. And he just comments to his wife,
"Hey, Timmy, do you remember the first time I asked you to dance?"
"Yeah. Go away and leave me alone."
"Oh, you do remember. But you finally said yes at our senior prom. As I recall, I swept you right off your feet."
"And into the refreshment table."
Something like that.
So this reinforces my theory that this is like a proto incel show because like it's a very like common tactic of nice guys to not get the hint, like just keep going after like the person that they like over and over again, getting rejected again and again and again, and the show shows you that that will pay off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a wife who's not into anything you do.
Yeah.
Right.
And in the larger like incel pathology, okay, so. You two are familiar with the blockbuster hit from Steven Spielberg, Ready Player One, yes?
Not really. I never watched
it. Oh, boy.
All right. There's one very interesting thing about Ready Player One on a meta level. The entire setting is a breath away from being a Brave New World style absolute dystopia, and Doug occupies that same sort of space. This whole sequence of events is Mr. Dink, after reminiscing about the sad chain of events that lead to his loveless marriage to a woman who hates him, kicking a ladder out from under his feet and hanging himself with streamers, but it's played for laughs. You breathe on that concept, and it is the most hideously dystopian shit. But instead,
I did
laugh, everybody. Yeah, this is Ready Player One, but for being an anxious teenager.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
I didn't think about that at all.
God damn.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dink. And Mrs. Dink.
Mr.
I'm sorry
Dink.
For both of them, honestly.
Yeah, seriously.
Shit. But at least they get to chaperone this weird dance.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
Oh my god.
And as Mr. Dink is hanging himself, well, hanging himself up, not hanging himself, period, with streamers, Skeeter comments, "Looking good, Mr. Dink," which is either Skeeter being just blind and stupid, or Skeeter just dropping an absolutely merciless burn on this interloper into his cult.
So is this before or after, like, Doug meets Patty at the front of the school?
This is right before.
Okay.
What happens is that, like, Patty says something about how, "Oh, I'm sure you'll be all right at dancing." Like Doug's vision of a good dancer is just MC Hammer but white.
Yeah, it's
yes.
It's more like weird, awkward 90s hip hop references that don't really mean anything.
In these gigantic MC Hammer pants with MC Hammer sunglasses, doing what Jim Jenkins thinks a rap dance is. And this is what Doug is fantasizing about as he runs into Patty, who is the first character wearing a costume lazy enough to be
realistic.
Realistic. Like, Patty is just wearing a couple of strips of yellow construction paper around her head, and I'm a flower.
I mean, I'm into it. I could tell. Yeah. No one didn't realize what she was.
Yeah.
But let's back up a second.
Her colors are correct.
Let's back up a second. What we're talking about right now is after this like setup scene with the Dinks and Skeeter like setting up the gym for this dance, Doug is like kind of a time jump to the evening of the dance, and Doug is arriving and meets Patty out the front, and Patty is like, oh yeah, I'm sure you'll be a wonderful dancer. She also says,
you make a wonderful slug.
So she's, I mean, this was like they've been setting up for this the whole time, like where no one recognized what he was until Patty does. And like, but that's a weird thing to say to someone.
You make a wonderful slurm, you worm, baby. Yeah. But you want me to step on you, don't you, little slug?
So, right after this, so when Doug has that fantasy where he's dancing like MC Hammer, so I noticed that all of Doug's like fantasies about like if he can dance, he's dancing solo, right?
Yeah.
He's not like dancing with someone. So like, it's weird that they're paired up in pairs, and he's like, oh, I bet I can dance. I'll show you how well I can dance by myself.
Starts wiggling.
Yeah. But so he meets Patty. Patty is dressed up like a flower. And then Roger slams the door open and knocking Doug out of the way and talking to Patty. Now, Roger, let's talk, I think you guys probably noticed this too. But
yeah.
Roger is dressed up like a hammer and Patty is dressed up like a flower. And that is weird imagery.
And just
what
a
does
bit.
The slug represent in this?
Lots of psychology going on here.
Yeah, like, but what does the slug represent in this weird dynamic?
He's a little worm.
He's a little worm boy.
One of the things I forgot to bring up is like it's sort of perfect that like he's a slug because they both he, Doug, and the slug in general find table salt way too spicy.
And the other thing is that Roger's minions are there too, and Roger's minions are other home improvement tools. You see, if I was giving them way too much credit, I'd say that you see, the joke is that they are all tools. You see,
I wrote that
you
down.
Get it? Except for, here's the other part about that. All these costumes involve a massive amount of effort to put together. Like, does somebody have a costume shop in town that they're just slapping all over the place? Or are these people just spending all day throwing these things together for their elementary school costumed dance? More evidence to the fact that this is some sort of ritual bullshit.
You mentioned all the costumes, and I took a moment to, like, there's other kids in this dance, obviously, when they go inside. And I took a moment to, like, look at all the different costumes that people had. And some of them are amazing. Like, some of them are just, like, you know, normal things. Like, there's a clown and stuff. One of them's actually dressed up like Quail Man, which is, like, why this is not canon. Because Quail Man is there. And also,
yes,
in the first scene, Doug had a poster of Quail Man in his room. So, like, Quail Man is something else entirely in this. Gentle viewer, in case you haven't, you're not familiar with the Doug mythos, Quail Man later becomes Doug's, like, superhero persona that he imagines.
His second one after his first one sucks ass.
Right. But so there are other amazing costumes in this background. One of them is a kid that is dressed up as Ham and has a label Ham on his chest.
Oh,
that's my favorite Halloween costume I've ever seen. I want to dress up as Ham.
Yeah, that's a reference to oh god, Sam, help me out on this one.
This a reference?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a reference to fucking Atticus Finch. Which one is that? To Kill a Mockingbird.
Is it?
Yeah, that's a reference to the movie adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird, where the grand climactic sequence is the big showdown where what's-his-face trips on his knife, quote-unquote. Our protagonist is dressed up as Ham with just the words Ham written on her.
No way!
So that's a reference. It's not a good reference, but it's a reference.
Doug is a literary show and made me learn something today.
You're learning about Calvinism and Kill a Mockingbird.
And about rituals of unspecified nature.
Right. Okay, so we arrive at the dance, and they just, like, it's already going on, and, like, Doug and Patty go in there.
Well, really quick, sorry. So Doug, like, Roger's like, what are you doing here, Doug? I'm going to dance with Patty. And then Doug's like, no, I was assigned Patty. I'm going to dance with her. Which is the first time since we started doing this that, like, Doug has stood up for himself. But it's totally undercut by, like, him being assigned a dance partner. It's like he can't, like, he's not standing up for himself. He's just following the rules.
I am obeying the preordained order, goddammit.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like, he's standing up for himself, but it's, like, so, like, limp. But at the same time, he's, like, he has this, like, face of conviction. And Patty's like, hell yeah, that's my man who follows the rules.
That's my slug.
Right.
Squirm all over me.
Hell yeah, that's my boy who I'm vaguely aware exists on some level.
Slime me, Doug. Stick your eye stalk in my pussy.
Oh, good. Can you hear that? The cops are coming to arrest you for saying that.
FBI, open up!
Oh, shit. We gotta delete these tapes.
Oh, Jesus.
So we arrive in the dance, and after this moment of heroism, Patty takes the lead, and in the most unenthusiastic tone I can imagine, goes, come on, let's get started.
All right, we just gotta shuffle around until the blood fountain appears.
Right.
Come on, let's get started.
And so, like, they're, like, dancing together. And, like, Doug is, like, doing it. He's, like, making little moves. And Patty's like, don't forget to move your arms. And he's like, oh, yeah. So, like, they're having fun, right? Like, they're doing it.
Uh-huh.
But also, no one else has a dance partner. No one else is in a pair. Like, they're all just in a mob.
Maybe Doug just had a delusion about being assigned a dance partner because he doesn't want to actually, like, act on his feelings.
Yeah.
So he's just like, I gotta follow the rules. These are the rules. Like, you can't break the rules.
Porkchop told me I had to do this, and if I disobey my dog, he gets angry.
And Patty, like, pretended to not hear him when they were going, and she's like, oh, wait, what did you say back there? He's like, yeah, you're my dance partner. Right. Oh, shit.
Our grand climax consists of Roger looking directly at the camera and saying,
it's hammer time!
That's another 90s hip-hop reference. Come on.
Like, just, like, what the hell? And then, like this is the point where I note that Skeeter, one of the things that he is spinning is a pizza, which, okay, again, we're going back to the symbolism bullshit. We are in full-on Pizzagate territory here. The pizza is being spun as the hammer, the flower, and the slug converge at the center of the floor, watched over by the grand cockerel. This is an allegory of something. I don't know what, though.
This is a bad poem in, like, a freshman year poetry class.
Yeah.
You know, all I read into it was that this is a round food that kids like.
Yeah.
That's too simple.
Oh, yeah. Doug
Get
goes
out of
way
the podcast.
Deeper.
And then, like Roger picks up some ice because he's going to go and ruin Doug's day, but he is carrying the ice in front of him, and the ice is melting, and he slips and he falls, and Doug also slips and falls, and it hurts his foot, and he starts jumping around on his foot, and this is reinterpreted as him doing a cool new dance.
Instead of everyone laughing at him.
Right, and Patty supports him and says, like, let's all join in.
It's a Seinfeld thing.
Patty saves Doug's ass and says, oh, what a cool new dance you're doing, Doug. And while this is happening, Roger has fallen back. Like, he is in the hammer costume, except for it makes a crunch noise as he hits the ground. And it turns out that his head is too heavy for him to lift himself up off the ground. He is lying there, writhing in extreme terror, like saying, what's going on here? You can't just leave me like this. While everyone just dances around him in mockery of Doug's agony. It's utterly insane. Like, picture Mr. Dink as an actual, like, chaperone watching this and just watching this and just cackling. Like, yes, good. All has proceeded according to my plan.
Well, also, I mean, I think it's just implied that he built the head of his costume out of, like, literal, like, hard metal. Because, like, he hurts Doug's foot. Like, he falls down and then smacks Doug's foot with a hammerhead. And that's, like, how this, like, jumping around, like, oh, my foot's hurt. That's how it becomes the dance. Because he breaks Doug's foot.
Yeah. And then, like, we just fade from, okay, everyone has a good time dancing. And we fade to the... We fade back to going home to the funny residence. Where, evidently... Mr. Dink has decided to celebrate this event by knocking a couple more golf balls into the funny's mailbox, and then just Doug takes down that, well, that sure was a chain of events that happened.
Well, also, his foot is legitimately broken. Like, it's covered in bandages. They were, dancing all night, and his foot, he's like, I need to go to the hospital. And everyone's like, what a great new dance, Doug. He's just like, please, I need medical attention.
So, first point of order is that, once again, Doug is a hero for doing, making no decisions. He didn't mean to become a hero, didn't do anything but get his foot broken, and now he's a hero. Second, this reinforces my idea of the Calvinist parable, because what comes of pain? Dancing.
Right,
the most popular dance in the school comes from a broken foot.
Huh.
Break your body before God.
I track that. And then Doug trying to reach for a metaphor. He's trying to grab for some kind of explanation, a moral to this story. And all he's got is literary cliches because they won't let Jim Jenkins do the Bible quote he wants to do.
Yeah, even Doug can't pull a moral from this story. Doug can't pull a coherent point from this story.
Yeah, can I mention one more real quick, go back on the dance? It is noticed when it like goes to Mr. Dink, and Mr. Dink's like, yeah, what a great dance move. Mr. Dink's costume has no leggings to it. Mr. Dink is in like a Speedo at this dance for children.
Yes he is.
Yeah, like it shows like his bare legs with like a chicken onesie on top of it.
And he keeps saying he's a grade A thoroughbred chicken, which is like it's like a callback joke. But why wouldn't they just do something like, "No, I'm a rooster"?
Yeah,
like isn't that like because that would play into him being like a dude, and it would make sense. And it would like why what like costume wise, what's the difference between a chicken and a grade A thoroughbred?
Because
chicken?
There's a cock joke you can make otherwise, and we have to avoid that. This is a Christian show.
Also, I think it's just that...
Shag some balls.
Yeah.
It's also just that the grade A thoroughbred stuff is A, like, very exact, and he's a very exact person, and B, thoroughbred is very expensive.
Good point.
Very good
point. Maybe.
Fine.
Thanks.
And so concludes our first episode, We've Learned Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the episode ends with, like, his dog accidentally, like, landing on his foot, and then Doug just screaming at Porkchops. The only time Doug ever gets angry at anything is his sentient dog making a mistake.
Right. Man.
All
right. Any closing thoughts on this one before we move on to the next 15-minute episode?
All right. So our initial understanding is that there is, of course, some manner of eldritch mystery at foot. We've learned that Skeeter is head of the cult, master of its unholy ceremonies. But the role of Mr. Dink is as yet unclear. I believe he has been initiated into the cult. I believe that he is attempting to get to the bottom of the cult mysteries. But he may not be fully... He may not be at the bottom of this. He may be attempting to white hat this to get to the bottom of whatever hideous mystery lies at the core of the Honkaburger. Also, the role that Roger plays is similarly unclear. We're gonna have to dig further into that as we go.
My closing thoughts is dancing is a sin, and if you dance, you're gonna be in pain, and you're going to go to hell. Amen.
Amen.
My closing thoughts is, I hope when Doug was at the hospital getting his leg repaired, they also looked into the diseases he probably got when he got sprayed in the face with whatever Porkchop was using on his costume at the beginning of the episode.
Maybe the entire episode wasn't a hallucination that just followed. Maybe that's why, like, that's why he doesn't have, like, a track of time. Because he's just taken so much brain damage from the fumes. Maybe he's taken so much brain damage that it propelled us into this alternate reality where this show lies. It's just a fucking hallucination, man.
Yeah, Porkchop got his fumigation supplies from Om Shriniko, or however the hell you pronounce that.
What is that?
A Japanese cult that used sarin gas in a subway and tried to kill an awful lot of people.
God damn it. This is a history show now, folks.
Calvinism. Japanese cults.
It's like, we're going to make a new academic branch called Dougism. To rival feminism and Marxism.
Collaboration with the Institute of Gremlins 2 Studies when...
And with that, dear readers, we will see you next time for part 2 of episode 2, Doug Gets Busted. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.